Merħba għal program Minajnejn Barranin fejn jiena Colin Fitz niltaqa' u niddiskuti pajjiżna ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni u oħra għamlu lil Malta id-dar tagħhom. Mjawklita.7 Campus, Colin Fitz, Minajnejn Barranin. Tinsawx tal-program, apparti li Xandar Live u anka ikonna xi repetizzjonijiet hawnhekk fuq l-FM u fuq DAB, kif ukoll minn fuq is-sit elettroniku, jittella' wkoll bħala poddata fuq is-sit elettroniku kunu tistgħu ssibuh u mbagħad tniżluh tisamgħuh meta u fejn tridu. Minajnejn Barranin, Malta through international eyes, through global eyes, different people from different parts of the world who have made Malta their home. And today I'm going to introduce someone from South Africa, Natalie Mendes. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Colin.
Great pleasure to have you here. Let's start with your name, Natalie Mendes. Mendes sounds a bit like South American, Mendes. Is it a common South African surname, or
no,
or is there a bit of a story there?
No, it's a Portuguese surname.
Oh, Portuguese, okay.
Yes, my husband is Portuguese. Oh, he was born in Mozambique.
Okay.
And then during the civil war uprising, they left Mozambique and came to South Africa.
Because Mozambique was part of the Portuguese Empire.
Portuguese colony, yes.
Yes, till the 70s. One of the last countries to receive independence.
1974, yeah. I think it was 1974.
So during the uprising, which led to eventual independence, the people of Portuguese extraction who lived in Mozambique had to leave
That's correct, yes.
And some went back to Portugal.
Some did.
And some came to South Africa.
Yes, yes.
So how
quite
old?
Quite a huge Portuguese community in South Africa, actually.
Okay, how old were they?
My husband was 4 years old.
Okay.
So, yeah, he basically grew up in South Africa. Yeah.
What's his name? Let's say hello.
Louis.
Hello, Louis. You're married, you have two kids.
That's correct, yes.
And how long have you been in Malta?
We've been in Malta for 6 years now. It'll be 6 years on the 2nd of August.
So we're recording in 2024, so you've been here since before COVID.
2018, yes.
2018, okay.
August 2018 and then, 2019.
And you work in design and marketing, that sort of thing,
That's correct, yes. I'm a graphic designer.
And you're happy and settled?
Very, very happy.
Excellent.
Yes.
And does Louis work as well?
He does. Mm-hmm. He does. He works for Farsons Breweries.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, fun. Free beer.
In the beer packaging unit.
Okay. Quick question. South Africa. Is there a very famous South African beer?
Oh, yes, there's a few. There's Castle Lager. I think Amstel is more, I think, from Holland. But it's produced there. Mm-hmm. But Castle is the big one. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Castle Lager.
Yeah. So South Africa, which is one of the African continent's biggest and most influential countries in many ways, particularly the southern half of the continent. Natalie Mendes was born in South Africa.
That's correct. Yes.
And tell us about your childhood, where you spent it, and all the questions I ask always come back to Malta. So if you can compare where you were brought up and your childhood to the typical kind of childhood you would see here in Malta.
Yes. Well, okay, I was born in Johannesburg.
The capital?
It's one of the capitals. South Africa's got four capitals.
Cape Town?
Cape Town, Johannesburg, Pretoria and Bloemfontein.
Four capitals.
Yeah.
So it's divided into regions.
There's nine what you would call states.
Mm-hmm.
Johannesburg is in Gauteng, which is the smallest one.
Okay.
It's the smallest region.
I see.
But it is the kind of financial center of South Africa.
It is very well known.
It's supposed to be the richest, area.
Okay. And if we're looking at the map of Africa, you know, there's which part of sort of the tip of Africa is it at? Is it inland? Is it by the sea?
No, it's inland. So it's on the Haarveld. It's kind of inland.
If you're looking at the map, on the left-hand side or the right-hand
side? Yeah, okay. It's more to the east.
To the east.
Yeah,
okay, so
but it's inland.
Towards Madagascar, island, but inland.
Yes, yes, yes.
On the map.
Yeah, it's about, okay. I'd say about a good, if you're going in a straight line, maybe 4 to 6 hours from the coast.
Of course, huge. Yeah. Huge country, yeah. Yeah, so you were born in Johannesburg.
Yeah.
And it is Johannesburg, right? Not Johannesburg.
No, Johannesburg.
Johannesburg. That's
also known as Joburg.
Joburg, for short.
Josie.
Yeah. Josie. That's
different names, yeah.
And your childhood?
I had a very regular childhood. I was born in 1971, so it was a very safe place to be at that stage.
Mm-hmm.
So if I look at the kids here in Malta now and kind of the freedom that they have, that's what we had those days.
Mm-hmm.
But things kind of got progressively worse in terms of crime. You know, as kids you would ride around in the streets on your bicycle or you could, you know, walk around, but...
Would you say you had a sort of childhood like we would see in an American movie with those suburban houses with a front lawn and the back garden? And
yeah, very much so.
Wooden,
very much
so. Houses.
That's what the houses are like there. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, everybody's got a front yard and a backyard and a pool kind of thing. So.
And is your background, your family... the sort of the Dutch Boer, I'm not sure what the right word is.
Yes, so my mother is South African, but she's, my grandfather, her father was of British descent, whereas my grandmother was Afrikaans.
Afrikaans, that's the word I was looking for.
And my father was Italian.
Okay.
So there's a lot of a bit of a mixture.
There. And then we put your husband in there as well, and the Portuguese element,
like the League of Nations.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And just to establish that to our listeners, because this is radio, you're a white South African.
That's correct.
These are questions that have to be asked, of course, because they're part of history. But at the time, and up till 1990, there was the policy of apartheid. And so did that affect you in any way? I mean, what do you remember about the situation at the time? There were sanctions on South Africa, for example, by other countries. It was a bit of an anomalous situation, one has to admit.
It was. I mean, I was a kid in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Because apartheid, I can't remember when it was established by the National Party, but towards the early 80s, that's when, you know, the world kind of started clamping down on that law of segregation.
Yeah, trying to force South Africa to change the policy.
As a child, I wasn't really kind of affected by it because I didn't really know... what was going on. But yes, you know, there were separate
communities.
You know, like the black people were kind of corralled into certain areas, you know, and kicked out of their homes and sort of put into certain areas, into what we call townships. You know, and...
Well, as a child, there was none of this is your fault, of course, but I think...
No, look, I mean, you know, we always live with a stigma of what happened. But, look, in the early 80s, there were... It was a bit of a scary time because there were, like, always bomb scares, especially in the schools.
As well?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we would have, like, these drills, you know? So they'd sound an alarm and then all the kids had to duck under a desk.
Gosh.
And do this like mass evacuation. You know? So there was these constant drills all the time. And
I mean, it's so obviously very complicated, a situation.
Yeah.
I mean, what you're saying isn't nice, but on the other hand, you understand a group of people trying to establish their rights.
Yes,
so they had to use violent methods sometimes as well to be heard and to be seen and to force the issue. around the time, let's conclude on this issue by saying, you know, the big change, you know, F.W. de Klerk, and then Nelson Mandela, 1990-91. Was it a positive time? Was there a feeling of like, let's start afresh?
Well,
by that time, you were in your late teenage years.
Well, 91, I was already 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's when Nelson Mandela was released.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
when they announced that Nelson Mandela was released, there was like this, they're releasing Nelson Mandela. You know, it's like, because he was always painted as this terrorist.
Okay.
You know, and this
to your
bad
people.
Person.
Mm-hmm.
And when F.W. de Klerk announced that they were going to release him, you know, there was this kind of, I think, apprehension or fear from
the white.
I'm not
community.
Saying everybody, but I mean, I don't want to generalize. But when they did release him, it was so far from the, you know, what people were thinking because he was really a great man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
he really
mm-hmm.
was.
The reconciliation element.
I mean, he could have. You know, you can't blame somebody for being bitter, for being mm-hmm. imprisoned mm-hmm. for 27 years, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the reconciliation that came out of it was absolutely mm-hmm. phenomenal.
Mm.
So in 1994, the black population voted for the very first time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the queues were kilometers long, you know.
So
and it was a very...
Very historic moment.
Yeah, very
were
historic
you aware
moment.
You were living history?
Yeah. And actually, I mean, I had started working at that time, and there was actually a referendum
mm-hmm.
whether to give the black people the vote.
Oh.
So, you know.
We're talking
whites,
here around
I mean,
1990, early
90s. Early
90s,
yes. So all these white people now had to go and decide to vote yes or no whether the blacks can vote.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it sounds weird now.
It's
but
very
this
weird.
Is, this is what happened. This you know, you can't change history. This is what there was. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I worked with quite a few black people, and there was this really one wonderful gentleman.
Mm.
We used to call him Baba.
mm-hmm.
He played a saxophone. He was actually very talented. He worked in the print shop at the back. And he actually came up to me one day and he said to me, thank you so much for your yes vote, you know.
Well, it's the little things and the individual relationships that can change the big things sometimes.
Well, especially, you know, of this man now. I mean, he was quite elderly, so...
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine what he must have gone through in his life, you know.
Absolutely.
But he was just so happy that
that's a nice story.
He could actually get an opportunity to vote.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, to decide on a government. So, yeah.
So that was your childhood and in South Africa. Let's talk about more mundane things. For example, is it very hot there? What was the weather like?
No, not as hot as Malta.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you think Africa, sometimes you just think desert, you think jungle, you think...
Rocky.
No? Not as hot as Malta.
No.
This is summer 2024 when we're recording, where we've had a massive heat wave.
No, Malta...
Goodness me.
Malta, I feel like I'm cooking in my own fat. Seriously, it is... No. No, South Africa is not as... It does get hot, but it's not this kind of sort of oppressive heat, you know.
Humidity.
Yeah, it's... Well, where I came from, it wasn't as humid. It was a lot drier conditions. Obviously, if you go to the coast, it's a lot more humid there.
Okay.
But, yeah, winters are freezing.
Yeah. Freezing, really, in Johannesburg. Do you have snow and
There is snow on the mountains, yes.
And, of course, it's in the southern hemisphere, isn't it? So Christmas in summer.
Yes.
And
so
when we have summer, you had winter
there.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So
what was celebrating Christmas in summer like?
Christmas in summer, we were always on the beach, you know.
Really?
That was our holiday time, so December... December's when the school has their big shutdown, so they're closed for about a month.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd all pickle off to the coast. for 2 weeks.
Okay, and you'd rent a place or caravan or something?
No, my parents had a holiday home at the coast, yeah.
But as opposed to Malta, where it's like you live in, I don't know, in Sida, and then you go to St. Paul's Bay.
Yeah, or Brisabuja, a few kilometers away.
You're going many miles.
No, it was about a six-hour trip to get to the coast. But it was weird in Christmas time because everything is like, you know, the usual snowmen, you know, in the shops.
Yeah,
snowmen, snowflakes.
And Christmas cards and things, yeah.
Yeah, but...
So the decorations are the same as in Europe, for example, or the States.
Yeah, very much the same. Yeah, it's very westernized, you know.
So but you have summer on the beach.
We have summer on the beach, yeah.
So. Do people dress up as Santa, but in a bathing suit sort of thing?
Yeah.
Like just the cap and the beard?
Yeah. No, so it's... Yeah, those were fun times. I mean...
I think of South Africa in the same way I kind of think of Australia a little bit. Are there many similarities? I don't know, because they're both in the Southern Hemisphere. There's, you know, you think of the sea and the sort of beach life, even though there's plenty of life inland, far away from the sea. But somehow in my head, and maybe in many people's head, they equate South Africa and Australia in a similar way.
They are kind of similar. I mean, in terms of, I think, weather.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why a lot of South Africans immigrate to Australia.
Ah, do they? Okay.
Probably because of the weather. I don't know why else you would want to perhaps go there.
Mm-hmm.
Animals.
Dangerous animals, just like Australia. Yeah,
big
of course.
Big animals.
Of course. Big reserves and game reserves. And,
well,
and
we, so. We do have game reserves at home, the Kruger National Park.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, you know, you always hear these questions, are there lions in the street? No, there isn't. You know, there's no lions or giraffes or...
Walking around in the street.
No.
But you have seen them. When you've visited, like, this park?
Yeah, look, if you go to the Kruger Park, it's very much a natural habitat for them.
Mm-hmm.
Look, the Kruger Park is very big.
Mm-hmm.
You can drive for kilometers and kilometers and not see anything.
Much bigger than Malta.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, I think Malta can fit into one of our provinces, I think it's the Northern Cape.
Mm-hmm.
Are compared
okay.
sizes when yeah, but yeah, the Kruger Park's pretty big, so you can drive quite a while and not see anything. You'll probably see the same buck like 50 times, you know.
Oh,
but they do have the big five there, you know, the elephants and the rhinos, cheetah, leopard,
tigers,
the other one, lion.
Lion?
No, tigers no are tigers. Not
still
in South Africa, but yeah, leopards, cheetah.
Okay.
Lion.
All right.
Rhino and what's the other one? I think it's
zebra.
Wildebeest.
Wildebeest. Okay. Yeah. Which is an Afrikaans name, isn't it?
Yes.
Which has gone around the world. Fantastic. Let's have a little break. Let's hear some music.
Okay.
One of the two songs that you have prepared for us to maybe remind us or introduce us to South Africa or your part of South Africa or maybe. Tell us a little bit about yourself. What's the first song?
Okay, the first song I would choose is Spirit of the Great Heart by Johnny Clegg.
Spirit of the Great Heart by Johnny Clegg. Now tell us who Johnny Clegg is.
Johnny Clegg is a South African singer.
Mm-hmm.
He was quite popular. Unfortunately, he's passed away since.
He's passed away,
yeah,
okay.
He was quite ill.
Is he
his music is very synonymous with South Africa.
With South Africa. Is he a black artist or a white?
No, he's a white.
A white artist. Is he the artist who was also known as Juluka?
Yes.
So Spirit of the Great Heart by Johnny Clegg. And that's the first choice by Natalie Mendez during this show today. Malta through Global Eyes on Campus 103.7.
The world is full of strange behavior. Every man has to be his own savior. I know I can make it on my own if I try. But I'm searching for a great heart to stand me by underneath the African sky. A great heart to stand me by. Great hearts under African skies.
song of the wind in the grass. There's a rolling thunder across the savannah, a hope and a dream at the edge of the sky. And your life is a story like the wind. Your life is a story like the wind.
I'm searching for the spirit of the great heart to hold and stand me by. I'm searching for the spirit of the great heart under African skies. I'm searching for the spirit of the great heart. I see the fire in your eyes. I'm searching for the spirit of the great heart that beats my name inside. Sometimes I feel that you really know me. Sometimes there's so much you can show me.
From our first song, we'll continue with the story of Natalie Mendez. And as a child or in your life, did you know anything about Malta at all? Did you know whether Malta existed?
No.
No, not in your history books, or anything?
I might have kind of heard about it. Mm-hmm. But the way we actually found out about Malta... Mm-hmm. We had friends that moved here.
Oh.
Well, we were all having a barbecue and they one day announced to us, oh, we're leaving, we're going to Malta.
Oh.
So our first reaction was, where's Malta?
Yeah.
You know, so...
And there were South Africans as well, your friends?
South African mm-hmm. Portuguese, yeah.
Okay.
Yes. So with a lot of Googling later, we discovered where Malta was on the map.
When was this around?
This was in 2015.
Okay.
Yeah, they came in 2016. So
that was your first introduction to Malta.
So, I mean, when we saw them off at the airport, my husband said to my brother, let's see how they do. Mm. give them a bit of time and...
I might consider this. I don't want to pry whether maybe you had personal reasons why you wanted to leave, but weren't you happy in South Africa? I mean, it is your home. Or were you looking for were you a bit restless? You wanted something new? By this time you had kids,
yes.
I assume. So
we had kids. South Africa, unfortunately, has, it's not a very safe place to live.
Okay.
The crime is completely out of control.
And all over South Africa, or so it's not sort of
maybe
centered in certain areas.
Yeah, I would have to say all over.
Gosh, okay.
You know, it's economic stability is terrible. Mm-hmm. You know, we have daily power cuts.
Gosh.
I mean, I laugh when people in Malta complain about. the power going off, you know, for during, half an hour or 15 minutes, and then everybody's up in arms. But I mean,
it's a bit more serious than that in this heat wave we've had. But
yeah, of course.
But yes, but then we have AC's most of the winter, for example, we don't have power cuts. Yeah. But there you would have power cuts.
They have something called load shedding, because South Africa, the electricity works on very old-fashioned coal-run power stations.
Oh.
And unfortunately, nothing was maintained, you know, so it's a very old system. So the grid can't handle the load. So what they do is they do something called load shedding, where every day they'll turn off the power for about 2 to 4 hours at a time, and maybe twice a day they'll do that.
Gosh, that's really awkward. Oh, dear. So the economy isn't great.
No, it's
the country has so many resources.
It does. It has a lot of resources, but yes.
Some mismanagement, maybe.
Mismanagement, corruption.
Oh, dear.
So, you know, without getting into too much
detail, yes, of course.
Detail or that kind of thing.
It wasn't a place that you could see much of a future,
My children don't really have a future there.
Gosh.
You know, and my husband, he had a business, and of course these power cuts every day was affecting his business.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, it wasn't easy. I mean, we had a good laugh, you know, but we just decided enough is enough, you know.
So you hear about people even reaching Malta from Somalia and many Central African countries.
Yes.
And obviously there are reasons. Sometimes it's a war, sometimes it's bad economy and they're looking for a better life and jobs because the economy. And you even have, but you rarely hear of people leaving South Africa. In fact, South Africa sometimes has a bit of an immigration problem. People going south instead of coming north.
Yes, yes, yes. A lot of people coming from Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Angola, Nigeria. You know, they all come south to South Africa. You know,
and yet some South Africans do want to leave or have to leave because the country they feel isn't functioning well enough.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's been a lot of people that have left.
Okay.
You know, or trying to leave. I mean, obviously, with the economic climate there now, it's very difficult to sell a house, you know.
Oh, gosh. Well, so your friends left and Louis said, let's see how they do.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Your friends did okay?
They did okay, yes.
They were happy here?
Well, they're no longer here. They got work opportunities in Portugal, so they've since moved there.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think the time that they were here, they were very happy.
And the word trickled down to you, so you and Louis decided.
That's correct, yeah. So
let's look into Malta.
He sold his business, sold the house, packed whatever we wanted up, and that was it. We came to Malta.
And did you come here because you invested, or I mean, is it easy for a South African to get a visa to live in Malta and work here? I mean, how does it work?
Look, we're lucky. I've got an Italian passport. My husband and my children have Portuguese passports.
Ah, of course.
So as EU nationals, it was easy for us to come to Malta and integrate into society.
Ah, yes.
But I think if you're a third country national, if you have a South African passport only, it's a bit more difficult and a bit more tricky.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You have to
Have work permits.
A work permit, so you have to have a job to come to.
Yes, you have a job, basically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so for us it was very easy. I mean, it was literally just a raft.
So did you do a reconnaissance visit? Or?
Yes, my husband came.
Okay, and what were his feelings? I mean, from a huge country to a tiny, tiny country. Yeah. And what were his first impressions?
I think his impressions was just, it's very cosmopolitan, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You know, always people walking around and in the cafes and...
Which is not so common where you come from because of the safety aspect.
Yeah, I mean, we literally were prisoners in our own home, you know, living behind high walls and electric fencing and vicious dogs.
Okay. So his impressions were good?
Yes, very good.
And he reported back? Okay, we're going to do this.
Reported back, took lots of forms and photographs. Said, no, that's it. We're coming here. So,
okay. So you personally, you were the flight arrives. How did you get here from South Africa? Were you fly to Rome or?
We went via Dubai.
Oh, Dubai Emirates. And Dubai Malta.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Of course. And you arrive. The door of the plane opens. You're about to go down those steps.
What was the first impression?
Yeah.
It was August. Okay.
Oh,
so
no.
I was dressed like a polar bear.
Really? Right?
I mean, because we came from SA, it's winter.
Of course.
So the door opens, you walk down the steps, and you're like just melting. I mean, I had this huge padded jacket on, and by the time we got to the apartment that we were renting, I was finished.
Yeah, absolutely, we're a puddle.
It was boiling. So I'm like, geez, it's hot here.
So that was, you couldn't think of anything else except the heat, probably.
Well, at that stage, yeah. You know, and we had gotten a taxi because I think between us we had like 12 suitcases.
Gosh.
So we had a van taking us to Aura.
Is that where you rented?
Which is where we rented.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And funny story, I mean,
we
weren't supposed to go to Aura. We were actually meant to go to Baharicha.
Okay.
But my husband, when he came, he had organized an apartment to stay in, mm-hmm. in Baharicha, paid the deposit and everything.
Yeah.
And I think 2 days before we were due to leave South Africa, the letting agent phones to say that the owner decided he was going to sell the apartment.
Oh, that's a bit awkward.
Yeah, I know.
Did he return the money at least?
Said to him, you better find us another place because we're coming here in 2 days.
Yeah.
We need somewhere to stay.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't find something, I'm going to come to your office and we're going to sleep there.
Yeah, tough talking.
So he told him, just keep the deposit and find something quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they found the apartment in Aura and we did an online chat with the landlord.
Yeah.
You know, video chat. So luckily we found something, thank God. Okay. Otherwise, we would have landed here.
With all respect to the people of Aura, I'd prefer Baharicha. It's smaller and less crowded, especially in summer, than Aura. But did you like it?
I liked Aura in the beginning.
Okay,
it was really nice. I mean, we were literally beach bums for about 2 months.
Okay,
you know, so it was nice to just walk around and check everything out, and we went to the beach every day.
Okay, fair enough. Good stuff.
So it was nice in the beginning, but there was a lot of building going on there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of buildings sprung up. So towards the end, it got really crowded.
Mm-hmm.
Parking was a huge issue.
Just a little point. South Africa and Malta, we drive on the same side, don't we?
Yes, that's right.
British influence.
Yes.
So right-hand drive cars. And
that's correct, yeah.
I'm a bit of a car fan, and I understand that you would probably have the same kind of, like, Fords and Austins and Hillmans, the same British cars. And
same highway code, everything.
Yeah, very much like even in the 70s and 80s, you'd have the same kind of cars you'd find in Malta. You'd find and classic, the same kind of classic cars.
Of course.
Very British influence.
Very much so, yes.
Yeah. Driving here compared to driving in South Africa?
In South Africa, obviously you've got more open roads, whereas Malta is these tiny little narrow two-way streets. We've back home we've got like 6-lane freeways going in either direction, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a bit of a challenge, I suppose, you know, but it's not too bad.
Something you do, you just got used to, a bit of practice. And both you and Louis drive.
Yes.
Yeah,
fantastic.
We both
do. Okay. I had to redo my driver's license, so that was quite a...
Oh, it's not valid? You had to do a driving test?
No, South African driver's license. You can't swap it for a
local
Maltese,
one.
Mm-hmm. local license. Mm-hmm. So you have to do everything from scratch, from the theory test to the practical. So it was a bit weird after driving for 30 years that I had to do that again, you know.
Did you pass first time, though?
I did.
Oh, good. Good for you.
Yes, I did.
Good for you. Just to go off at a tangent a little bit, I ask my guests in this program to prepare some information about perhaps a book or a novel or some piece of literature that represents the area where you're from or your country. And have you thought of something, Natalie?
Yes. Well, there's a few. There's.
This is to suggest to our listeners, if they want to find out more about South Africa, they could read perhaps this book or poem or whatever.
There's an author called Dillian Mateer.
Dillian Mateer? Yes. Yeah? Could you spell that for us?
D-A-L-E-E-N. Mm-hmm. M-A-T-H-E-E, I think.
Okay.
She wrote books specifically about the Nasna and Tsitsikamma forest area.
Okay.
And wonderful stories. The one is The Mulberry Bush.
Mm-hmm.
They were translated. They were written in Afrikaans, but
okay.
Translated into English.
Mm-hmm.
So there's The Mulberry Bush and Phila's Child.
Okay.
Which Phila's Child was made into a movie, I think. Yes.
As well.
Right, yeah.
Is there a big movie industry in South Africa? Like, there is one in Nigeria, apparently, and obviously, like, India.
Yeah,
so outside of Hollywood, do you?
Yes.
I mean, we even make movies in Malta, you know? So
there is, but, I mean, obviously, it's not
as big as Hollywood.
As big as Hollywood. Mm-hmm. There's that guy, I can't remember his name, though. I think he made a movie called District 9.
Oh, yes, the actor.
Yes.
Of course. He went on to the A-Team as well. There was a remake of the old TV show.
Yeah, District 9.
Yes, he was the. I think he made the movie as well as Sholto Copley.
That's it, yes.
A few years ago, he was very, very popular. Yes,
so I never saw
and
the
a filmmaker
movie.
As well.
Yes, that's right. I never saw the movie, but apparently it's about these aliens.
Yes.
And I think it's kind of an analogy about the whole segregation and
immigration. It even touches upon the immigration from Nigeria.
Yeah.
So yes. It's a very symbolic kind of movie. But it's sort of representing what the current situation is, this theoretical what if aliens...
Exactly,
helpless aliens come to Earth rather than aliens that want to invade. It's not like Independence Day. These aliens just end up here and they've got nowhere to go.
That's it.
Kind of thing. Yeah. Interesting movie.
I've never seen it, but I believe they're called prawns.
Yes, the nickname for them is prawns because they look like a little bit like shrimps or prawns or whatever.
Yeah, well, that actually comes from, I was reading, there's an insect in South Africa called a Parktown prawn.
Okay.
It's actually a king cricket.
Ah.
But...
is it big? It's scary? Oh, goodness me.
Yeah, it's quite big.
It's about like 4 or 5 inches, yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. So it's a king cricket. Nothing in the looks department. It's hideously ugly. But they're actually very good for the garden. You know, they kind of repel the slug population.
Ah,
snail population.
Okay. Of course, because you have to think of that.
It's actually
useful. It's
you know, the cats always used to bring them in and play with them. And of course, if you shoo them out with a broom, then they spray this like brown liquid at you.
Oh goodness!
In self-defense, yeah, okay. So they're not.
So there's a significance why the movie called the aliens prawns.
Because they look like Parktown prawns.
Speaking of which, if I visit South Africa, I'll probably need to take some inoculations. I think. Parts of Africa for sure. I'm not sure about South
Africa.
Yeah,
it depends on where you go. You'd have to take malaria shots.
Did you guys, when you as residents, as people who from South Africa, did you have to take these things?
No, I think because where we came from,
mm-hmm.
Obviously if you go to places like Mozambique or close to there, then you would have to take malaria shots, but where we came from, I mean, there wasn't anything.
The mosquitoes carrying the insects. It's more the sort of jungle areas and the swamp areas.
Yeah, sort of the tropical areas. Yes,
tropical areas.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the book and movie, perhaps, or TV series that represents, or I mean, District 9 mentioned.
Yeah. TV series, I suppose. I would say
something that people would have access to.
Possible. I don't think they'd have access to that. It was called Isidingo, but it was about the mining, in South Africa.
The mining, of course.
You know, the gold
big
mining.
Big industry, yeah. What was it called?
Isidingo.
Isidingo. Is it in English? Or?
It is, yeah.
When you... Isidingo. Okay. Could you spell that for us so that if anybody is interested in looking it up?
I-D-I-N-G-O.
And... What period did it come out, the series?
It actually came out, gosh, when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. It first so came 80s. Out, and then it kind of dropped off a bit, and then they restarted it.
Okay.
You know, for a more modern audience. I did watch a while, but...
Okay.
Yeah, but TV shows is mostly, you know, American stuff.
Ah, and just like here, really. Yeah. I mean, local stuff, yeah. Some locally acted things.
Yeah.
American stuff, maybe some British comedies and things.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, British comedies.
Did you get the same kind, you know, Fawlty Towers and things like that?
Yes, Fawlty Towers.
Because you don't need to dub them, right?
That's it, yeah.
So you probably had quite a similar childhood to me, like,
yeah.
I don't know, Knight Rider and...
all the 80s shows.
All the 80s shows, yeah, the A-Team, yeah, same as here, pretty much. Yeah, those adventure shows.
I think TV came out in 76, so it was very much like the Brady Bunch and 80s enough. So all these American, these
Little House on the Prairie.
Little House on the Prairie.
So yeah, totally similar, yeah, yeah. Do you learn, English at school, obviously. Is English a national language there? Is it an official language?
There's 12 national languages.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah, one of them is sign language, actually.
It's an official language of South Africa.
It's an official language,
yeah. Oh, wow.
So it's English and Afrikaans, and then, of course, you've got all the different languages of the black nations. You know, like Zulu, Xhosa, Pedi, Venda.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's just so many of them.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Do you have to learn all 12 of them at school, or do you get to choose to your sort of area? And
no, not really. Back in the day when I was at school, it was English and Afrikaans.
Okay.
And obviously, because of apartheid, none of the black languages were taught in school.
No. At the time.
At the time, yeah. So now I think they do Zulu.
Mm-hmm.
I think
over South Africa.
Yeah, Zulu, and I'm not quite sure if there's other languages. Yeah,
is Zulu the sort of largest of the African communities, nations?
Yeah,
they call them.
Yes.
Uh huh. Uh huh.
Yeah, that's the largest.
Okay. And the longest tradition, and the sort of most powerful. Okay.
Yes.
Afrikaans. That is related to Dutch, isn't it?
It is. Yes. Yes,
is it very similar to Dutch, or has it developed its
enough,
own?
Funny enough, it is similar to Dutch, but if I hear somebody speaking Flemish, Belgian Flemish,
yes,
that I can understand more what they're saying
than
if somebody's speaking Dutch.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's also the kind of the dialect, but I don't know. Flemish to me sounds more Afrikaans, you know.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, but it is derived from Dutch, from the Dutch settlers.
Let's listen to another piece of music that you've chosen for us that perhaps represents where you come from, South Africa, the region, or you, that represents you or that you like very much.
Okay, so Johnny Clegg again and Osieza.
Osieza, what does that mean?
I'm not entirely sure.
Okay, all right. But
I just like the song.
But this artist must have been really huge in South Africa.
He was.
And he was a white man, but also popular among the black black residents, the black community, South Africans as well. And he used to work very hard towards reconciliation and
absolutely.
The end of apartheid.
Absolutely, yes.
So Johnny Clegg, sadly, he's no longer with us. No. But and this is called Osieza, a choice by Natalie Mendez, who is South African and a resident of Malta, along with her family.
Through all the days that eat away, and every breath that I take, through all the nights I have lain alone in someone else's dream awake, all the words in truth that were spoken that the wind has blown away. Oh, it's only you that remains with me, clear as the light of day. Siya kuhla lomhlaba, siya wena. no one can put him down. Inside him a boy looks up to his father for a sign or an approving eye. Oh, it's funny how those ones so close are now gone, still so affect our lives.
Oh, see, yes,
oh, I'm coming.
Oh, see, yes,
I'll be coming.
Since so figure where my mind or mine.
You know the tide is turning.
Oh, see, yes, oh, see, yes.
You know the tide is turning.
See,
Natalie, you're in Malta. You arrived in 2018.
That's right.
We talked about your arrival here. How has life been since 2018 to here? Has Malta been kind to you? Have you been happy, you and your kids?
Yeah, Malta's been very kind to us. The kids settled in nicely.
School?
In school.
They didn't have any major problems?
No major problems at all. Made friends easily.
The school curriculum similar? Or
very similar.
Oh,
yeah,
very good.
Very similar.
So how old are the kids now?
My son is 16 and my daughter's 13.
Oh, the teenagers, the terrible teens.
Terrible teens, yeah.
So do they, that's like, does the 16-year-old want to go out to Valletta or Pacheville or
no,
whatever?
No, funny enough, that's more my daughter.
Really? Yeah? Okay.
My son is a bit more housebound. I mean, he's a homebody, but...
Okay. Does he play lots of video games with his friends online and stuff?
That's it. He's in front of his computer 90% of the time. Yeah. Whereas my daughter's never home, so...
Okay. And do they do sports and things? And
No. Well, my daughter does dancing. She does ballet. But other than that, yeah, just hanging with the friends.
Okay. And have you made lots of friends here, you and Louis?
Not really. I wouldn't say, you know, we have a huge
circle of friends. Yeah.
We do have other friends from South Africa that have moved here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Is there a little bit of a community?
Yeah.
How many people from South Africa are in Malta at the moment?
I think last I heard it was about over 2,000.
2,000, really?
Yeah.
Would they be working, for example, in these iGaming companies?
I think a lot of them. Yeah, a lot of them are on the gaming industry.
Oh gosh, yeah. That's quite a significant
number.
Well,
people that I have met, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how do you and Louis relax here in Malta? I mean, what's your favorite things? What are your favorite things to do?
We go to the beach.
The beach, that's your thing.
Yes, that's our thing. So every weekend in summer, obviously.
Do you have a favorite beach?
Adira Bay.
Adira Bay is your favorite?
Yeah, we live in Melilla, so...
Okay. And barbecues and things like that?
Oh, all the time.
Really?
Barbecuing is a South African institution.
Is so it? And
yeah, we brought that with us to Malta. So.
Which leads me to my next question. Apart from books and movies and songs that represent your country, obviously I have to ask about food. So tell us your favorite or typical South African food that maybe outsiders don't know and that they should try.
Okay, well, there's a few. Well, barbecuing, I mean, obviously we have something called boerewors.
Okay.
Which is like a sausage.
Uh-huh.
And funny enough, there's butchers here in Malta that make boerewors.
Do they?
Yes.
Because you told them to, or because you found that happening already?
We found one in the Shar.
Mm-hmm. He's obviously done his homework about international
sausages.
Yeah,
he had a South African guy working with him, and this guy taught him how to make boerewors.
And is it authentic? Does it taste like
yes,
home?
Yes,
oh,
it does
well
taste
done.
Like home. Yeah,
that's interesting.
So you can find that, you know, in different shops, you know, in different
is
stores.
Is it mostly beef-based or pork or...?
It's mostly beef-based.
Mostly beef-based.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else? Any other types of foods?
Well, there's milk tart, which is probably my favorite.
Tell us.
Milk tart is like a dessert with a short crust pastry and sort of a custard filling with cinnamon on top.
Ooh. Do you have to make that yourself, or would you find it available here?
No, I don't think you would find that yet.
Okay.
So it's pretty easy to make.
Mm-hmm.
Can Google the recipe.
Absolutely. Anything else you'd like to mention?
Gosh.
Maybe
South African food.
Other stuff that you put on the barbecue, or maybe you make the potatoes in a certain way, or...
No, not really. I mean, it's all pretty... It's just barbecuing is just our thing, you know?
Have you... Do you like any of the local food, Maltese foods?
Yeah, I do. I do. I love rabbits.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't... We weren't a rabbit eater before you came here?
No, we did. I mean,
you did in South Africa.
I mean, yeah, we... You know, coming from a sort of a half Italian family.
Oh,
you know,
of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we did eat rabbits, but they make it really nice, yeah.
Okay.
Love the Maltese sausage and pastizzi.
Ah, lovely.
Yeah. Discovered pastizzi shops when I arrived here, so.
That's good. That's good. Have you felt the need, you or any members of your family, the need to learn Maltese since you've been here?
Well, the kids are learning in school.
They are?
Yes.
How are they finding it?
It's obviously not very easy, but my daughter's actually doing very well. They do Maltese for foreigners. So you have the mainstream Maltese classes.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the foreigners, there's it's kind of the more basic, which is easier for them, you know.
Yeah.
But...
Yes.
Yeah, my son comes out with Maltese words every now and again, you know. So.
Very the naughty ones.
Probably,
sometimes
yeah.
as well. Oh, that's good. And what about you and Louis?
Well, you know, having English spoken, it hasn't really been...
An issue.
An issue communicating with people, you know. But people at work all speak Maltese, so you kind of pick up...
Yeah.
What they're saying, you know.
But you don't feel sort of ostracized or...
No, not at all.
Outside.
Not at all.
Because when you need to be listening, when you need to be told things, you'd be told in English and...
Yes.
And you can make your point in English and...
Yeah, absolutely.
Nobody's...
So gonna... communication's never been a problem.
To conclude, let's start with the things that you feel maybe could be better here in Malta, the things you dislike, the things... That might make you leave if you ever had to leave again, move country.
Well, I don't think I'll ever leave, but...
Oh, good. I mean, that's nice.
Obviously, first and foremost is the amount of construction that goes on here is just ridiculous, you know, and also the... What they're doing to the natural... The heritage of the country, you know, there's so many beautiful places here, so many beautiful buildings. I mean, I drive past these...
The older ones.
These older sort of Maltese villas and they're putting up these ugly blocks of flats and, you know, apartments. So that's the one
That's a common gripe all through the series with all
You know, everybody complains about that. Probably the constant roadworks. You know,
they are annoying, it's true.
What can you do? I mean,
roadworks need to happen, but sometimes you feel that too many are happening at the same time.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, finish one first and then start on the next one, you know, instead of doing everything the same time. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's about it, you know. I can't complain about anything else.
And the things you love, the things you write home about, well, you tell your relatives back home.
Well, the things I love, the freedom.
You being able safety.
Being able to walk in the street in the middle of the night and not having to worry that something's going to happen to you. The freedom that my children have, you know, and just it's a beautiful place. I mean, I love the sea, so I feel like I'm on a permanent holiday.
Well, that's a lovely way to end this interview. Thank you so much, Natalie Mendes, for being here and my guest on Campus 103.7 on this program, Malta Through Global Eyes, Minainain Baranin. It's been a pleasure having you. And join us next week, dear listeners, for another edition where I'll be interviewing somebody else, another person who came from abroad and made Malta their home. And I remind you that this program will be placed on our website, the Campus 103.7 website, where you can listen to it and other programs in the series. This is the second series, and you can listen to these programs as podcasts. Thank you and goodbye.